Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The Obama administration recently announced that beginning next year, Medicare will reimburse doctors for having one of the toughest conversations possible, the one about end-of-life care. Now, this is the same proposal that didn't make it into the Affordable Care Act. Massachusetts has actually been a leader in this area because last year, this was the first state to require doctors and nursing homes to offer end-of-life counseling to terminally ill patients. Now, there has been a lot of emphasis on encouraging these discussions in hospitals and doctors' offices. Yet, the question of end-of-life care isn't just a medical one. It's a spiritual and moral one. That's why now many Massachusetts religious leaders are starting the conversation among their congregations. So we're joined now by three faith leaders to talk about this. Rabbi Carl Perkins is the spiritual leader of Temple Aliyah in Needham. He joins us today from Philadelphia. Rabbi Perkins, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Also with us, Reverend Gloria White Hammond, co-pastor of the Bethel AME Church in Jamaica Plain. Reverend Hammond, good to have you back on the show. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
And today, joining us in the studio as well is Reverend Rosemary Lloyd. She's a retired Unitarian Universalist minister and advisor to faith-based communities for the nonprofit group The Conversation Project. Reverend Lloyd, welcome to you.
Hello.
Well, let me start with you, Reverend Lloyd. Why is this important to start this conversation amongst faith communities now? Because I understand that more than 30 congregations are having end-of-life care discussions just this month in Massachusetts.
Right. Next week, we'll be launching Conversation Sabbath. It's a project that we created out of the Conversation Project, going around to congregations and hearing how very welcome this conversation is among people of faith, but all kinds of people. And we thought, how could we spread this more? Let's have Conversation Sabbath. And we put out the invitation to clergy to preach or teach about the importance of these conversations sooner rather than later. And people signed on. And it's spreading across the country without our even trying. It's really amazing.
What is it that having this conversation about end-of-life care in houses of worship and amongst congregations that you can accomplish that maybe you can't having that same conversation in a doctor's office?
You're right. We started, rather than at the medical side, we're starting it at the value side. We're starting with asking people to talk about what matters to them, not so much what's the matter with them.
Interesting. Well, Rabbi Perkins and Reverend Hammond, let me just kind of ask you, when you have this discussion, Reverend Hammond, where do you begin it with your congregants?
Well, as you know, churches are cradle-to-grave operations, so we are very much, this is a continuum in terms of our conversation. And we began the Conversation Project training about 6 months ago, offered it from the pulpit, and I anticipated maybe we'd get 15 people or so to be a part of it. We had 40 people who participated in the training, so people were very much ready to have this conversation, and particularly in the context of their worship space.
Mm. And so can you tell me a little bit more about that? Because, I mean, questions of mortality are very central in Christianity. I mean, does that immediately sort of flow right into the discussion as you start?
It really does. People wondering about the significance of their sickness and certainly being in touch with the reality that they're going to die. Well, what does that mean? How do I do that transition well? How do I go from the chaos of my everyday living and acknowledge the kind of peace that's supposed to come on the other side? And how can we as a congregation work together to facilitate that process?
Well, Rabbi Perkins, let me ask you the same question. At Temple Aliyah, how is it that you begin or one begins this conversation?
Well, I I spoke about this on Yom Kippur, which is mm-hmm. the Day of Atonement, when pretty much everyone is present, because this is something that all of us have to confront. Too often, one will have a discussion with someone very close to the end of life or very close to the end of the life of a loved one, and it's so much preferable to begin to talk about these issues, as difficult and awkward and uncomfortable as they are, months, years perhaps, before they're absolutely necessary, as a way of alleviating the anxiety and the stress that comes from not clarifying what one's wishes might be.
Mm. Are there any particular passages of texts that you find very instructive or helpful in providing guidance?
Well, I think that in general, in the Jewish tradition, we have this notion that healing is a great, great religious obligation, a mitzvah. And so Jews traditionally have long understood their obligation to seek to restore health and well-being to other people. But when medicine can no longer restore, when it can no longer be beneficial to a patient's well-being, then one comes to the notion of presence. And fulfilling someone's desires at a time like that is really central to our mission.
Hmm. And Reverend Hammond, can I ask you the same question?
Sure. Well, one of the things that we've sought to do is to normalize the dying experience. So we've started looking at dying examples of people dying in Scripture. For example, Jacob. And as Jacob was preparing to die, one, he acknowledged that I am going to die. He brought all his sons together and gave them a sense of what some of his concerns were, what some of his wishes, hopes, and dreams for them were. And then he gave them instructions about where he wanted to be buried. So it was very much a normal part of their existence. And so what we're looking to do is to normalize it as the end of a life well lived, and to begin our conversations before we get there.
And people respond to that.
They responded very well.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about end of life care and conversations about end of life care, and what role can or should religion and spirituality play when it comes to talking about and preparing for the end of one's life. And listeners, I'm curious, have you turned to your reverend, your priest, your rabbi for guidance? And if so, did you find solace and healing and intelligence in that guidance? Or maybe did it confuse you even more when it came to your options and what was right for you? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. To let us know what you think about religion, spirituality, and the end of life care, or you can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Reverend Lloyd, let me ask you, I understand that there was at least one congregation that didn't want to participate in sort of in launching this conversation. Is that true?
Well, it's always kind of interesting. I mean, we had almost every congregation we approached did want to participate in this, but there was one congregation that just wasn't ready right now. There were so many other pastoral issues that were at the forefront. But, you know, and the way that I was responded to was, you know, all my people are wanting to go to heaven, but none of them want to die to get there. So we're not really going to be talking about that just yet. But every place else we went and offered this opportunity, even if people couldn't do it now during Conversation Sabbath, they want to do it at some other time of year. People have done it, like Carl started talking about this in October during the high holidays, the Jewish high holidays, and others will be continuing this on throughout the new year. Mm-hmm. Everybody, it's amazing. When we do these starter kit workshops that we bring into congregations, we talk about how people are afraid to talk about death and dying, but you give people 5 or 10 minutes to turn to a neighbor and say, so what's most important to you when you think about the end of your life? It's hard to get people to stop talking. They really do want a safe place, someone who's going to listen to what they have to say, and they want to have the conversation.
Interesting. Sure. Reverend Hammond?
Yeah. Sure. I think one of the advantages to us in terms of having the conversation project is that it's a non-threatening. And so for many of us, it's the conversation is uncomfortable, even as clergy persons, even though we often guide families through that point of transition, it still is hard to have the conversation. The conversation project training has really facilitated that tremendously.
Well, this is such it can be a potentially very thorny issue because, and Rabbi Perkins, I'll start with you on this particular question. What do you do when, you know, a congregant might come to you with questions about options that don't necessarily fall in line with you know, your religious beliefs? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm wondering, you know, maybe there are options at the end of life for living wills or heroic measures or certain directives that that one's faith may not necessarily align with. How do you deal with that?
The answer is we discuss it, and that can be a very uplifting experience. Yes, there are certain choices that people might make in our society today that that would not be considered appropriate from a traditional Jewish perspective, suicide, for example, or assisted suicide. But there are other, there certainly is a wide range of ways that people can be treated that are certainly considered to be in keeping with our religious tradition. And what's important is to start the conversation. That's really the opportunity for people to clarify what their values are, what really matters to them. And what they'll discover, I think, is that within our tradition at least, there really is a great deal of support for patients seeking to do what is best for them at that time. You asked me earlier about a text, and I remembered a very interesting story from the Talmud about the death of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. And as he lay dying, his disciples were praying for him to live. And up in heaven, the angels were praying for him to join them. And his maid saw how painful it was for him to endure this dying process. And according to the story, she went up to the roof, picked up a large vase, and threw it off the roof. And it landed in the courtyard with a loud crash. And that caused Rabbi Yehuda's disciples, who were praying on his behalf, to stop their prayers because they were startled by this noise. And at that moment, it says, he passed away. I think that suggests that there comes a time when what's beneficial for a patient is not necessarily to continue to seek to apply certain medicines or certain treatments, but to step back and look at what's best for a person.
Reverend Hammond, did you have a thought about that?
Sure, and I bring to this a perspective as a pediatrician as well. So for gosh, over 30 years, I practiced pediatrics, and I'd say one of my most profound experiences with someone who was dying was a little 5-year-old girl who had a kind of leukemia for which at the time there was no cure. And at the point that she decided to, with her mom, to stop the treatment, she said that she had talked to God and she had prayed. Praying was talking to God. And there were three things God told her. One, God told her that she was going to go to heaven. Two, God said that she was going to see her grandmother who had already died. And three, that she wouldn't be sick anymore. And I can't think of a more elegant summary of, at least from our theology, that passing on to the other side represents.
Hmm. We've got a couple calls here, so let's go to them. Chris is calling from Cambridge. And Chris, I understand that you're a Buddhist chaplain?
I am, yes, and a lay teacher, and I also teach at Harvard Divinity School, courses on chaplaincy and end-of-life care and so on.
Well, so I'd love to hear your perspective as a Buddhist on this conversation.
Yeah, so I had two thoughts. I mean, one was certainly the view of Buddhism around death and dying and how it contextualizes it very much in terms of spiritual practice. So there's a notion in Buddhism, in many traditions, that the moment you're born, you begin to die. And it sort of frames the process of how we then practice impermanence, how each moment changes from one moment to the next, even though we have this notion of permanence. And so this the practice of compassion being extremely important in how Buddhists then begin to grapple with the suffering that comes with the knowledge of our mortality. Mm-hmm. And so practices are pretty much embedded in that kind of compassion, cultivation for oneself, but also compassion for others, and being mindful of just the changing experiences we have from moment to moment, mentally, emotionally, physically, those kinds of things.
Right. Chris, forgive me for interrupting you, but I really appreciate your thoughts and your perspective here as a Buddhist chaplain. Thank you so much for calling us. And by the way, I should say that we're 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And we are talking about religion and spirituality and the role that communities of faith can play when it comes to having difficult discussions about end-of-life care. Again, would love your perspective. We're at 800-423-8255. Reverend Hammond, I actually had another question for you. And actually, it's for all of you, Reverend Hammond, Reverend Lloyd, and Rabbi Perkins, because it suddenly occurred to me that, yes, we're trying to encourage communities of faith to have these conversations in houses of worship or amongst congregations. We're also trying to encourage doctors and patients to have these conversations in doctors' offices and hospitals. And yet it still feels so very compartmentalized, right? One is a medical conversation, the other seems to be a spiritual conversation, but death is an experience that covers the gamut. It seems to be like we're still missing something in terms of bringing together the whole person.
Well, certainly one of the most exciting developments for in medicine most recently is the development of palliative care medicine, in which by definition one has a conversation that not only addresses the physical symptoms, the pain, but also addresses the social and spiritual psychological challenges that an individual faces. So this is, we now have a subspecialty or specialty in which embedded in it is are conversations about spiritual matters. That said, this is, it's new and it's beginning, but the exciting thing is that we have named it and people have begun to speak about it. The fact that you have a conversation out here means that we educate the populace, and it's very often that people push their physicians. So as more people engage in the conversations in their communities of faith and outside of the medical facility, we hope that they will be pushing medical practitioners to have the conversation.
Well, Reverend Lloyd, let me ask you, because I recently spoke at the Boston Book Festival with Dr. Atul Gawande, of course, who wrote Being Mortal, this fabulous book about end of life or mortality in America. And he said, you know, the goal is a good life until the end, not just the end of life, but a good life until the end. So, I mean, I'm wondering, should conversations in doctor's office include questions of, you know, is your definition as the patient including, should it include your spiritual needs as having that good life until the end? Should that be part of what doctors talk about?
That's certainly one of the aspects, one of the ways to bring it up. It could be contextualized as a spiritual conversation. But this is, as you say, this is a universal experience. It's a human experience. Embracing the reality of our mortality is something we need to do as human beings who are spiritual beings. A lot of people talk about themselves as being religious, but not spiritual, but not religious, right? I think doctors don't leave that all at home. We think it's compartmentalized, but it's really very integrated. And when we do that, when we actually acknowledge that we are mortal, as being mortal, as Atul Gawande has said, it's to give us the opportunity to have the best life possible up until the very end, because we're not ignoring it and we realize this is the day. This is the day we're alive. What are our goals for today? What are our goals for treatment if someone's sick or with an advancing illness?
Mm. And Rabbi Perkins, did you have a thought about that?
Yes, I think that once it becomes more comfortable for people to talk about this outside of the medical context, then I think that the connection between the two will be easier to make. I'm reminded of another book that came out not too long ago, which is Roz Chast's book, Can't We Talk About Something
Right.
More Pleasant?
Right.
As long as we still have this notion that this is just something we really don't want to talk about, then it's just going to be talked about in the medical context, and that's really not the best way. Once we contextualize it within our overall spiritual concerns, I think that it'll be easier to make those connections.
Let's take a couple more calls. Alex is calling from Medford. You're on the air, Alex.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. So I'd just like to say that it's great hearing the conversation. I grew up with my mom, who worked as a hospice nurse, and for her coming home in the middle of the week, because she left early, one of her patients had passed away, was just a typical thing. And she would always tell me, as much as she could about their life and impart their wisdom and, their mistakes, their strengths, anything that, kind of teach me a lesson and help me see, from my perspective, how young I am, how far I truly have to go in life. And, the death isn't the worst thing that can happen to you. It's having lived a full life, and dying is what everything does. Everyone has that in common, and it's how you live the rest of your life that really makes the importance.
Alex, thank you so much for sharing that, and thank you for your call. Let's turn to one more. Banu is calling from Southborough. You're on the air.
Oh, hello, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
And what's your thought today?
Hi. So I'm. I lost my son about 5.5 years ago, and he battled with a serious disease for about 10 years before that. And you know, I'm not. I'm Hindu by birth, but I'm not very religious. But towards the end of his, you know, about 48 hours before he left me, it was more about, you know, trying to think about what is it I'm doing for him. You know, is he happy with what I am doing for him? And it was me who was holding on to him, and I felt that once I started thinking that and I started letting go of myself, you know, to some extent, I think he kind of started leaving me.
Yeah.
And that's how we ended the care of our child at that point.
Banu, thank you so much for your call. Of course, I'm terribly sorry about the loss of your son, but I really appreciate you bringing your story to us because, Reverend Hammond, Banu makes me think that when it comes to end-of-life care, it's not just the dying person that we
Absolutely.
Have to think about. It's
Absolutely.
The whole family.
It is. It's a constellation of individuals. And thank you so much, Bonnie. And again, I'm so sorry for your loss as well. And what you remind me is so often I've seen patients who themselves have been ready to go, again, even children. And oftentimes their concern is not so much for themselves. They've made peace with the fact that they're going to die, but it's with those family members and how and who's going to be there to support their family members. So I've heard many times when parents, siblings have said, it's okay to go, and then the patient very sweetly slips away. So that was a courageous thing that you did, and again, thank you for sharing your story.
Well, in the last minute that we have, I want to sneak in one last call in here. Ellen is calling from Wakefield. You're on the air, Ellen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, and this is a wonderful conversation to be having. I'm an intensive care unit nurse, and we see this every day and deal with the death and dying every day. And there were two things that I wanted to say. The first was that I think when patients realize that it's their time, they find peace and something about their faith. If they have nothing and no one, they have their faith, and it gives them so much solace. And the other thing that I wanted to talk about a little bit really quickly was that a lot of times during family meetings when patients are going through this dying process, families will say that when it's God's time, he'll take the patient. And a lot of times that's difficult being a healthcare professional in the sense that the artificial life support is what's keeping a patient alive. And how do you explain to them that God may have already taken the patient had they not been supported by these machines?
Yeah. Well, Ellen, thank you so much for your perspective and your call. And to that last point, let me just turn to you, Reverend Lloyd. Do you have an answer for Ellen?
Well, I think the most important thing is we want to be having these conversations before a loved one's in the ICU. We want to be having these conversations mm-hmm. sooner rather than later. And for people wondering how to even get started because it seems like an awkward conversation, we have our starter kit, which really guides people on how to talk to your loved ones, starting with yourself, what do you want in case you can't speak for yourself, and then what does someone else want? How to talk to your doctor, how do you talk to your kids? We've got starter kits for all that. It's free and online, this conversation project.
Well, with that, we're going to have to wrap up this conversation today. Reverend Rosemary Lloyd, retired Unitarian Universalist minister and advisor to the Conversation Project, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Rabbi Carl Perkins, spiritual leader at Temple Aliyah in Needham. Such a pleasure to speak with you, Rabbi Perkins. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Magna.
And Reverend Gloria White Hammond, co-pastor of the Bethel AME Church in Jamaica Plain. It's always a delight to have you on the program, Reverend Hammond. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Magna.
I'm Magna Chakrabarty. We'll be back in a moment. This is Radio Boston.